It's totally obviously doable. And we're talking about giving birth. Yeah, it's like, it's just like very, very intense. And then one of the things that really, like, I was projectile vomiting, which was like forcing her out. Like when it came time to push, like the pushing I couldn't even do.
Yeah, because you're numb.
That I couldn't connect to my body. And it was just very hard. Like, I think so many women have like a beautiful birth experience and they're like, it was so easy. But I really do. I feel like that's what you hear the most, but yeah. I think that is such a small percentile. Like, I can't see that how that's possible.
Goes smoothly. Yeah. I feel like it's not that many women.
Yeah.
You know? Oh my God. It's fucking crazy, but I'm very happy for you.
Thank you. Yeah. And Megan, thank you so much for coming on the pod.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So you're a KROQ. Is it K-Rock or KROQ?
Yeah, it's K-Rock, you know, but we do say KROQ on the air and things like that, so.
So I grew up, I'm from New York, so I grew up listening to 92.3 K-Rock.
Yep.
Is this the West Coast K-Rock?
Yeah, basically they're... You know, there's the L.A. K-Rock and then there was the New York K-Rock. And I actually think that they might be rebranding 92.3. It's like Alt 92.3 right now. But I think they're going to bring it back to K-Rock as well.
I didn't even know it changed.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot has changed. But yeah. So I'm excited for New York. I think that they'll appreciate that station kind of like coming back to its roots, you know?
Yeah. Because I know I listened to Howard Stern. So was Howard Stern on 106.7 out here?
No.
Okay.
No, I believe he did, I don't know if it was syndicated or if he was on like 94.7.
Okay.
I think before that became like the wave. It was like a talk radio station. So I'm assuming it was probably syndicated. But I know he was like obviously like legend morning show in New York. And yeah, I mean, I think like all, like, I think to this day, he's like still just the biggest radio personality that's ever lived. You
totally.
Know?
Well, I grew up listening to him, was obsessed. I don't know why I thought that would be broadcasted out here, but now I just realized that doesn't make sense.
Well, sometimes they'll syndicate shows,
okay,
you know,
okay,
that are big enough, but I don't believe that he was ever on K-Rock. Yeah.
I just started thinking about how radio worked. Uh-huh. Back then, and yeah, then I was like, actually, that doesn't make sense at all. Never mind.
Yeah, but they do syndicate a lot. So we, mm-hmm, but we had, you know, Kevin and Bean, you know, mm-hmm, kind of like starting their show in the 90s, and then they just like owned for such a long time.
And did you grow up in California?
Yeah, I did. I'm from Rancho Cucamonga, uh-huh, so like a couple hours east. But you know, I didn't listen to K-Rock a ton because we literally couldn't get the frequency in Rancho. It was like, it was just like tons of static. So, and like, honestly, at that point, it was like, I was listening to a lot of like oldies with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like listening to like 99.1 KGDI, which was like more, you know, R&B, hip hop type stuff. And I was listening like when it was Star 98.7 and like Kiss FM, because I was definitely more into the pop world and top 40 stuff, I think, when I was kind of younger.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it was
middle
pretty
school
much,
dance.
Yeah, middle school dance vibes, you know. And then it was like when I got into high school and I, you know, found out about like emo music and stuff like that, that I got more into the whole like rock world, you know. But it's kind of funny because I didn't really grow up listening to K-Rock, but it was always the station that I hoped I would end up at, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, because my career kind of started at Live 105 in San Francisco when I was like, I had moved up there for college and had met someone who worked there, and it planted that seed like in my brain that I could actually go into radio.
Yeah, I actually was a DJ on my college radio station Hawaii.
Oh my God, in Hawaii.
Yeah, I went to college at University of Hawaii and they had a radio station, and I had grown up loving Howard Stern, and like my mom would play him every morning as she took us to school. Like, we never listened to kids' music growing up, like,
yeah,
in the car. We never had like Disney music or whatever, any of those, like
your mom,
like today
badass.
I'm like, I don't know the songs to play for my daughter, like, yeah, I'm playing Under the Sea every day. I'm like, I need some other shit, like, I have nothing else.
Oh my God.
So I just like really loved yeah, just like talk radio and just how crazy he was and always just like pushing the limits and just, mm-hmm, like that shock value. And I think that like influenced a lot of my comedy too, just trying to like get a rise out of people and just the way that he was. So I just wanted to do the same version of that. So then when I saw there was like a radio station at my college, I was like, oh my God, I have to.
That's awesome.
I had a show called I Bang Teachers for A's because I thought that was like a funny name for a college.
Oh my God, that's so awesome.
Yeah, but then I got kicked off, or fired rather, because I'd be partying. And I had so much dead air.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'd be alone doing, like, 3 to 6 a.m. And I'd be, like, literally blowing lines. And then, like, a song would be, like, over for, like, a minute. And I'd be like, oh, fuck.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've all had our classic dead air moments, you know? I just had one recently, you know?
Oh, really?
Like, I went to the bathroom. I thought everything was in auto. It definitely wasn't. I came back and all the alarms were going off. And
so alarms go off? I was actually just thinking about that on the ride over that. How does it work with going to the bathroom?
I mean, as long as you have everything in auto, it's like once you do your talk break, you usually have like a few songs before you're going to talk again. So you just can like run to the bathroom, like no big deal. But since I didn't have it in automation, once the song ended, there was just dead air after that for a couple minutes. I don't know how long it was, honestly. But basically, my music director ran in. The engineers are all, because the engineers immediately get an email. And then you walk in the studio and it's just like crazy loud alarms going off. So.
And no one else can jump in besides you.
Yeah. I mean, like, if the engineers came in before me, they would have been able to push the button and stuff.
Okay. So do you have to run, like, the soundboard?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a soundboard?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, once you kind of get the hang of it, like, it's super easy to run, you know? Especially with this, we used to use something called Audio Vault, and that was, like, a whole lot cooler because you could actually control all of your elements, and now we use something else that it's just kind of like, I don't know, it more like runs itself, so it's not as like interactive where like you can just like psh, make sure like the song, like there's no like space in between any of the elements, and now you can't really do that as much. But you know, when I started, like I didn't know how to run a soundboard. I didn't study this in college. Like I, you know, kind of fell into it in a way. And so I remember when I got hired to do my first weekend shift on my own, I had no idea how to run the soundboard. Like the person who's my music director now at K-Rock, he was with me at Live 105 in San Francisco. So we've been working together for like 12 years.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's crazy. And he was the one that like showed me how to run the board. And I was like, well, I'm just going to do the best I can. There were a lot of mistakes made. I definitely said fuck on like maybe my like second or third show. But there's the dump button. So I dumped it like 10 times and it didn't make
it
out.
Wait, how does the dump button work?
So you're always on like a 30-second delay. So you have a little, you know, wiggle room. But you have to catch it at the like exact right moment, but I didn't even really know how to use that. I just hit it a bunch of times. So it was like, it was like probably lit my own worst enemy or whatever. And it was like, there's like 20 seconds out of a lit song that's just.
So you have to do that over the songs with the cursing and when you're speaking as well?
Oh, no, no, no. The songs are all censored already. But
so it's for you.
Yeah. So I was like talking over the intro of like lit or whatever. So when you dump it, it definitely affects, like, it's like, you know, it literally like removes like 20 seconds or whatever of, you know, whatever you dump out. So
like if you're like, anyway, so that's a fucking beep. And then it will like backstep like 5 seconds or something.
Yeah. It just basically like removes that part.
Whoa.
Like essentially jumps to 20 seconds later or whatever. And then what has to happen is over time, it has to rebuild up to that 30 seconds again. So you can only use that dump button so many times until you're actually in real time with the listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you start at a college radio station or you started after college at 105?
Yeah. So I was going to college up in Marin County and I was studying just like sociology, you know, I was like, oh, you know, I'm probably going to go more into like psychology. And then I went to the summer concert that Live 105 puts on called BFD. And I met this guy named Menace, who actually is on the Woody show here, like our competitor on Alt 98.7. But I love Menace. And he, like, so I, like, had, like, taken some mushrooms. Like, I put some, like, mushrooms on my In-N-Out burger, like, on my way. And I got down there and I met up with
That's SoCal.
Yeah, I know.
Mushrooms on the In-N-Out burger.
You know? So, like, by the time I get down there, I'm, like, feeling pretty good. And I meet up with my friend Madeline. And she's like, oh, I know this guy that works at the station. He's going to give us, like, some better tickets. I was like, sweet. Because I've always just been, like, such a music fan, you know? And so, but she had to leave early. So I was, like, standing there. I'm, like, watching Social Distortion. I'm tripping balls.
Story of my life.
Yeah, same, dude. So many, like, times watching music, like, that I don't even remember, you know? So I was so fucked up. So Menace walks up. He's like, yo, like, where's Madeline? I'm like, oh, she had to leave. He's like, well, do you want to, like, go backstage with me? I'm like, fuck yeah. So we're, like, walking around backstage, and I'm just going, like, on and on about, like, music and how cool this, like, you know, event was. And he was like, you should come, like, intern at the Woody Show. I was like, well, I'm still in college. Like, I can't really, like, fit in my schedule, but it planted, like, a seed in my brain. So I graduated from college, and I was dating someone in San Diego. So I was like, if I get this internship at 91X in San Diego, I'll move here. So I applied and I got it, and I moved to San Diego, and I did that internship for, I think it was, like, only a year, because I started doing a bunch of blow, like, all the time, and all I needed to do was get this, like, little slip signed to continue the internship, because you had to do, like, one college course to be covered. So all I had to do was take it in to get signed, and I couldn't even do that because I was up all night doing blow, and I, like, obviously couldn't show up to do anything. So I got fired from that internship, and then I kind of, like, had a period, brief period, where I got sober. It was, like, the first time that I, you know, did, like, 12-step meetings. And so I got, like, 60-something days sober. And in that time, I was like, you know what? I'm going to move back to the Bay Area, go to my alma mater, go to graduate school, and get my MFT. You know, I was like, I'm going to become a marriage and family therapist, even though, like, I'm super fucked up, you know? And then right before I moved back up there, like, Menace hits me up and he's like, hey, like, I pitched you to be, like, a sidekick on my night show. Like, do you want to do it? And I was like, holy shit. I was like, yes. So I literally, like, moved back up to San Francisco, like, dropped my bags, and I started at Live 105 the next day.
Wow.
Like, helping Menace with the night show. And then, like, eventually, Miles, my music director now, like, he was working in production. He helped me put together something called, like, an air check. So that's, like, an example of what you would sound like on the air. And then I, you know, because I found out that someone was leaving weekends. So I turned that in, and then I got
hired. That, like, a reel?
So that was, like, my, yeah, kind of like a reel. Exactly.
And is that, like, your best moments on air? Like, what kind of?
Well, not for me, because I didn't have any on air stuff. So, like, so mine was, like, literally, like, I'm in the studio. Like, Miles calls me up. He's like, hey, if you want your own show, you need to come in right now and I'll help you make an air check. And I was kind of drunk, and I was like, all right, I'll be there. So I showed up, and literally it was like, Miles is like, okay, we're going to play the end of this song. You're going to talk, and then over this song. And I was like, what? Like, what do I say? Like, you know, so Miles was, like, feeding me, like, things to say. Like, if I were to be able to find that air check, it's basically, like, Miles's words coming out of my mouth. But, like, I, you know, I did the best that I could, turned it in, and I got it. And then so I was, like, I was doing, like, early morning shows on the weekend and just throwing darts at the wall. I was like, and at the time I was, like, doing a lot of drugs still. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to, like, make up this rocker girl persona to hide behind, even though that, like, is who I am anyways. But I was, like, kind of, like, thinking of, like, a Kat Von D type person. And I was like, I'm going to, like, hide behind this persona so that it's not me, and like so, like, nothing can hurt me, you know. And then I just started, like, just going for it. And one day my program director was listening. He's like, you're really good, I want you to, like, take over the night show, which was, like, fucked up, because I was like, it's Menace's night show. And so Menace didn't get fired or anything, but it was like they shuffled things around. So it just kind of, like, grew from there. And then even at one point, like, Menace and I did our own morning show, which I quickly sabotaged, you know, because I was, like, just doing so many drugs. At that point, I was, like, an opiate addict. Like, you know, I was, like, driving in one day, like, passed out at the wheel, like, went up onto the Embarcadero and crashed into, like, concrete.
Wow.
And, like, I should have got a DUI, but, like, the firefighters and the police guys, like, knew who I was from radio.
Really?
So they didn't, like, I just, like, sobered up real quick, and I was like, oh, like, made up some story. And then went to the hospital and, like, conned a Percocet prescription out of the doctors, you know, as you do.
Yeah.
But I just sabotaged that morning show pretty quickly. Like, I think we only did that show for, like, 9 months. And then it was not long after that before, like, I got fired because I was just being sketchy. I was mm-hmm. just doing, like, crazy shit, you know.
Yeah. I want to hear more about developing the on-air personality because I feel like every person on the radio has their own personality. Is that something that's encouraged by, like, directors, like, or advice given to you when you're starting out, like, find your own kind of thing that makes you you? And then I also wonder how people come up with their names.
Mm-hmm. So I remember, like, there was this guy, Doug Harville, that was, like, the president of our cluster of radio stations up in San Francisco. And it was, like, a Christmas party or something. And he's like, congratulations. You know, he's like, you just be you. Just be you. That was, like, literally the only advice I've ever gotten in radio is just be yourself. Just, like, be yourself. And so there's no scripts. Like, the only thing that you'll have in the studio is, like, liners. And that's basically, this is what we're promoting this week. Here's all the info you need. Here's a concert calendar. Highlight that stuff. But other than that, it's on you to just come up with your own thing. So for me, like, it's very much just, like, a part of my personality where I'm just, like, very positive. I, like, kind of always, like, tell people, like, uplifting things. I'm very honest about my sobriety, you know, because I think everybody's affected by that. So, you know, and I also like to laugh. So I try to be, like, funny. Like, I'll throw in, like, clever quips as much as I can or joke around. So that's kind of, like, my thing. And, like, everybody's totally different. But I would say, like, the best people that I've worked with are people that are just uniquely themselves. And they're not doing, like, corny radio bits and stuff like that, you know. I was really lucky to come into K-Rock at a time where, like, Kevin and Bean were still doing mornings. And it was, like, Kat Corbett and Stryker and Nicole. Mm-hmm. And so I came in to fill in for Nicole while she was on maternity leave. And it was very, like, scary because, you know, I'm coming into, like, the biggest alternative rock station in the country. And I was, like, 60-something days sober. I was living in a sober living in Covina.
Oh, wow.
And driving out.
Where's the state? Oh, wait. Is it by the airport?
It was in Culver City, but now we're, like, in Miracle Mile.
Is that the station that Frasier goes on to? Do you know who Frasier is?
I know who he is from his show, but, like, that the
is
show
that
Frasier.
On, is that on?
Oh, wait, are you talking? You're talking about
the
Frasier
Smith.
KCRW.
Oh, no. Okay.
No, fine. Yeah.
Because I was like, I went there. I guess I would know if was I
was.
Is that
Santa Monica City College where you went?
I felt like it was by the airport.
Oh, okay.
But I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. So we're, yeah.
Wait, so then how did you end up at K-Rock then? So you got fired at in San Diego?
San Francisco,
sorry. Mm-hmm. So then how did you end up at the biggest station?
So there was, like, a couple of lost years. Mm-hmm. Like, I, you know, when I got fired, I lost my apartment. I was, like, you know, sleeping in my car and, like, on friends' couches. And I was in, like, a really toxic relationship. And I worked at a winery for a little while. It's a great gig for an alcoholic, which is nice. And then inevitably had to, like, call my mom and be like, I need to come home. I need to go to rehab, all that stuff. So after I finally got sober, literally, like, Nicole Alvarez reached out to me. And because, you know, radio is kind of a small pool. Mm-hmm. And so the sister station to Live 105 was K-Rock. So, so like, we would do our BFDs and we would have, like, a lot of the same lineup as the artists that would also play Weenie Roast. So we were, like, very much, like, connected. So I knew all the jocks at K-Rock. And
jocks.
So she hit me up and she was like, Look, I got to go on maternity leave. They're looking for someone to fill in, and I think you should go for it. And I was like, dude, like, there's no way that CBS Radio is going to hire me back. They have, like, a file on me for, like, what I did. And she was like, just try. And so, like, at the time, the music director, Lisa Warden, she, like, I knew her because I worked with her husband in San Diego at 91X. So
it
was like,
it is a small
everything's
world.
Like interconnected, you know? So I emailed her and I was like, hey, like, I'm trying to get back in the game. Here's, like, a few air checks and I would love to, like, meet. And she was like, yeah, like, come in. So
did you make new air checks or those old ones?
Dude, I was so lucky that my friend Morgan was still at Live 105. And I was like, dude, please scour the computers and see if I had saved anything on there. And luckily, I had some stuff saved and they hadn't deleted it yet. Mm-hmm. So she sent that all to me and I just edited together like a few air checks, you know? So it was just like luck. And so then when I went into K-Rock, I met with Lisa Warden and Kevin Weatherly and I just told them my whole story. It was like rigorous honesty right from the beginning, like just being like, I am in sober living. I only have 60 something days sober. I know this is a gamble. I fucked up, but like I miss doing radio more than anything. And they were like, all right, like, we're going to give you, like, a couple tryouts, you know? Yeah. And, like, Lisa was, like, crying. She was, like, moved to tears, you know? And I was just like, whoa, this is nuts. Especially because I felt like it was the universe being, like, see what happens when you're honest. See what happens when you're sober. Like, I was getting, like, all these, like, green lights, you know? And then I did, like, two tryouts. And they were like, all right, you got it.
So what do you have to do for the tryouts?
Just do a couple of on-air shifts overnight and just, you know, do your best. And then they'll air check it again. You'll sit down with them. They'll be like, this sounds good. Maybe don't do this. This sounds good. Whatever. And so they were, yeah, they brought me in. And then so I went like from, you know, working at a vape shop, living in sober living, to coming in and working full-time nights while Nicole was out at K-Rock and doing interviews at Weenie Roast. Like,
wow.
2 weeks later, I was like, this is fucking crazy. Like, I couldn't believe
it. That's crazy. It's like something kept pulling you into the world and believing in you until you could, like, believe in yourself.
Totally.
Because all these people were really looking out for you, it seems like, in radio.
Yeah. It was, like, always other people that were doing for me like what I couldn't do for myself. And I had no intention of ever doing radio. It was never even occurred to me as a kid, like, oh, I could be on the radio. Like, never. Yeah. So, you know, I really feel like it was like my destiny in a lot of ways. Like, it was like what I was supposed to do.
I love that.
You know?
And you have a good voice for radio too.
Thank you.
You're gorgeous, but like,
oh,
you have
God,
a really.
I don't know about that, but.
No, you are, but you have like a really cool voice. Like,
I feel
like everyone on the radio has a cool or interesting voice.
Yeah.
Do a lot of people put it on?
What's the weird radio voice
that some guys do?
Yeah,
is that like a thing of the past?
Shit. Yeah, like
hey,
WKGI or what? Yeah, it's just like, I fucking think that shit is so corny, but I think if you were to go into, you know, middle America or some different areas of the country, you'd probably hear more of that. I think one of the cool things about being in LA is that everybody is just very much themselves, you know, and you can almost take a jock from an alternative station and put them on a pop station and they'd still be able to do it because they're professionals and they're just being themselves. And the music can always be sold. It doesn't really matter if you're passionate about it or not. But I know for me, it's like when I really am passionate about the music, it really makes a difference. Like, I would not ever want to work on a pop station.
Yeah.
It's just like so not my thing. But you know, if you're a true professional, it's like you should almost just be able to work like on any station, you know?
So then what do you have to do exactly like in between songs? Do you have to talk about the song? Like, do you have to know about all of these artists or is there pressure to be like, I don't know everything about this artist kind of thing?
I know for me, I'm just like such a nerd with that stuff that like I always want to know, like I always do a little like Google search about like every artist and try to find out at least like a few things about them that's interesting.
Yeah.
And if I really like the artist, then I like nerd out on it and I'm like looking up interviews and da da da. So you can really tell on the radio if I just like passively I'm like, it's this song, blah, 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 and move on, then I just don't probably really give a shit that much about that song. But if I go on and on talking about the song and then the artist, like that's when you can tell that I really like a band. But you don't have to really do anything. They just let you do what you do. So in between songs, I'm usually just like seeing what's trending on Twitter and seeing like what the music stories of the day are and just seeing if there's anything like funny or interesting that's happened. I don't know what the fuck I would do without the internet. Like, I, you know, looking back to like the DJs in the 90s and stuff, like people like Jed the Fish, who was like, you know, just K-Rock staple and legend. He was just so fucking crazy that you didn't know what was going to come out of that
guy's
mouth.
Like, where do these names come from? Like, Jed the Fish.
Honestly,
like, I hate how there's that DJ called DJ Sour Milk.
Okay. I haven't heard that.
that I think it's on like a rap station in LA or something. But I'm like, I fucking like, where do these names come from?
I mean,
are they given?
Sometimes like it'll just be like a nickname that comes up.
Like Megan Holliday is a name, right?
That's my real name.
It is? Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah.
So like,
you didn't even need a fake name.
I didn't. It's just like my dad's Persian. So his original last name translates to like holy day or good day. So when he moved to America, he was like, you know, I want to Americanize and like change
that's
it
so
to
cool.
holiday. Yeah.
That's such a cute name.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I mean, it gets me into trouble though, because it's like properties that I own have to be put into like an LLC. Like I just had to pay a company to like remove all of my personal information off the internet because like there's like stalker situations that happen and it gets like freaky, you know?
Ooh, do people like wait outside the radio station?
Not really, which is good, but we've had some like threats and like just, you know, it just can get creepy. I know that there have been jocks who like had to get restraining orders and things like that. So it just gets a little weird. So with using your real name, it's like I now know I'm like, oh, yeah. Shit. It's like, you know, I don't know if I would do anything different. But, you know, you have people like Menace, for example, like his nickname comes to, it's like a lyric from like a Tupac song. It's like you're about to feel a wrath from like a menace or something like that. And I don't know who gave him that or what it, like, you know, but it came about while he was like working at like a hip hop station at the time. So everybody's just got like their own little
thing.
Yeah, nicknames. It's like, you know, I know this guy like Mike Crank and we all just like call him Crank. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or just, yeah, there's just.
Because he smokes a lot of ice.
Yeah, right? For real. So yeah, everybody's just like, their names just come about kind of randomly.
Yeah. So then when you first started working there and then you said 2 weeks later you were doing interviews at Weenie Roast. So how is that for you going from just being on the radio to actually interviewing artists? Like, how is that transition for you?
I mean, I had done interviews at Live 105 like plenty
on
of
air.
Times,
yeah.
But I was usually high on, you know, oxys or Xanax or drunk or whatever. Like, so I was always like, I just didn't give a fuck. I had the I don't give a fuck attitude. I would prepare for my interviews driving in, you know, I like, you know, it was like I didn't care. So it was terrifying to step into doing everything sober, like doing on-air shifts sober for the first time and then going into doing interviews. And I remember during the live broadcast, I was so nervous that like my voice was shaking, like, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, but I got through them. And then like, and now like I take my interviews like really seriously in the sense that like, I just want to make sure I have like all of the knowledge like memorized and then you can just like riff from there. But yeah, I was terrified. You know, it was like very scary.
Who are some of the artists that you were like super intimidated to interview?
Well, back in the day, in like maybe like 2013, Menace and I interviewed Jack White in his trailer at Outside Lands, and I just remembered like I like couldn't believe it. I like couldn't believe that we were like sitting in his dressing room, like talking to him. And I know that I asked like the stupidest questions. I remember I asked him, I was like, what do you do? I was like 22 or something.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, what do you do like when you're like really sick, you know? And he was like,
wait, that's a good question.
So, I mean, is it though? I don't know.
I want to know the answer.
So he basically was like, he's like, and he's so nice. Oh my God. He was just like, well, you know, it's like the show must go on. So you just gotta, you know, drink a lot of tea and just get out there and like do your best, basically, you know. And he was so gracious and like so kind. I've gotten to interview Beck, which I was like super nervous about because I like love him so much. But he was so sweet and so cool. He's like one of the nicest people in the world. So my favorite band is like Deftones. So I did an interview with like Chino on the phone one time and I remember being very intimidated by him because he is intimidating. Like he doesn't care who you are or they don't need radio. It's like, so, you know, he's kind of an intimidating one.
Oh, that's interesting saying that they don't need radio because I think in the past, like having a song on the radio would be so huge and life changing for people. But now how there's so much more exposure, that is interesting. So do you feel like can you sense like a change there?
I think that there are just certain bands that know that they rely very heavily on radio mm-hmm. to sell albums and get people familiarized with their music.
And that's for newer artists?
Yeah, newer artists or, you know,
people who were around for a long time and coming back.
Yeah, like if you think of like, you know, bands like maybe like The Killers or Foo Fighters and stuff, it's like they'll put an album out, but like sometimes people don't even realize that they put an album out mm-hmm. and stuff. So it's like you want to like keep familiarizing people with the current music that these like, you know, seminal bands are, you know, are putting out. But then and then like, yeah, definitely new artists for sure. They need the biggest push, you know, mm-hmm. they need their songs to be played like several times for people to even be somewhat familiar with them. But I think that there are certain bands like especially more that got really popular in the 90s. So like a band like Deftones or Tool or Korn or like bands like that where they have such loyal fans that will literally follow them anywhere. Mm-hmm. They will always sell out their shows. They will always sell albums and they don't really need radio. Even though we will still play like Change by Deftones. Like mm-hmm. we'll still play like a Tool song every now and again. You know, it's like they know that they can't really count on radio to mm-hmm. promote their new stuff.
Yeah, actually, I still listen to the radio because I have a Toyota RAV4.
Dude, I parked behind you and I have the same car in silver. Yeah, yeah.
So I don't have Sirius, so I just mm-hmm. listen to the radio all the time. And I feel like sometimes I'm like one of the only people who like doesn't have Sirius in LA and like is still actually listening. Yeah. And like I love to scroll through and like, you know, hit through all the channels and like see what's on. Mm-hmm. And I still do find like this is from a couple of years ago, like for sure. Like, I don't know how long ago, whenever they came out, you'd probably be able to remember. But you know, that like band that started in their like high school garage and they sound kind of like Led Zeppelin-y.
Oh, Greta Van Fleet.
Probably, right?
Okay.
Like, there were, like, these kids.
Yes,
this is, like,
Greta
probably a couple, within yes. the past, what, decade, right? When yeah. did they come out? Like,
or
seven,
wait, are you,
6 years ago? 5 years ago?
Yeah, yes. And they, it's, like, yeah, and it sounds exactly like Robert Plant. Like, his voice sounds like
yeah, but
like
there that. Are these kids who, like, started in a garage in yeah, Orange County or something.
These guys
okay,
are
I'm
Orange
probably
County.
Wrong.
Yeah, okay.
I'm probably wrong, but I'm sure that
it could be them. That's who,
it's
like,
probably,
I first.
It's probably who
of.
They are. But I remember, like, I heard them on the radio. And I can't remember who they are, but like I heard them on the radio and I was like, oh my God, this band is so great. Who yes. is this? Like, this isn't Led Zeppelin, but it sounds like them or
yes,
like.
Totally.
And
it's funny with that
cool
band.
When you can still hear like, because I feel like they got popular from the radio.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's something that doesn't fully happen as much today.
Yeah. It's very
is where
true.
I was trying to go with that.
Yeah. I mean, you have to, it's sort of like the radio can give you like a little push, but mm-hmm. from there, it's like basically you've got to sell, be able to sell tickets to mm-hmm. your shows. And I think nowadays, like online presence is so vital. It just mm-hmm. is, you know, it's like being connecting with your audience and just being really interactive and sharing your content is, I think it's just, it's like all, it's like a trifecta of mm-hmm. all those things, you know?
Do bands still come into the radio to like promote when they're doing shows in LA?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they'll come in and they'll do like, we do these like sound space performances mm-hmm. where like it's very exclusive and only listeners get to go.
Ooh.
And it's like I just got to see Jack White again, like perform in our sound space.
Yeah.
And there's like at most 300 people.
Like
in
a
there.
More intimate.
Yeah.
That's
and
so
I've
cool.
seen like Foo Fighters that way and Green Day and like, you know.
I'd
like,
so prefer to see them in that
oh, yeah.
setting.
It's unlike any experience you'll ever get to have,
that's
you know.
So cool.
Because like otherwise you're just seeing them in arenas, you know.
Yeah.
So that's like the really cool thing about radio is that it does provide these like exclusive experiences mm-hmm. that only radio can really do.
Yeah.
You know?
And you have access to like every concert probably too.
Yeah,
like you could probably get tickets to everything.
Yeah. I'm very spoiled.
That's
extremely
so fun.
Spoiled, you know, I'm very grateful.
And it does that cover for only California? Like do you
yeah,
travel
you
to
can,
see artists?
Yeah. I went to Riot Fest last year and that was just me like wheeling and dealing though. Mm-hmm. I was just like, okay, I'm gonna hit up you know, like Ilan from Nine Inch Nails, like when they were going to play. And then Nine Inch Nails dropped out and I was like, OK, I'm going to hit up Thrice. Like I'm going to hit up like so every day it was like a different band mm-hmm. basically got me in, which was like really nice. So sometimes it's like those personal relationships or finding their manager or whatever. And that, yeah, but it's kind of like definitely having the title of like K-Rock afternoon host is very mm-hmm. helpful because
totally
because inevitably I come back on the air and I go, oh my God, I was just at mm-hmm. Riot Fest and Thrice were fucking awesome and Joywave were incredible and like all, you know, like just you're talking up these bands mm-hmm. that otherwise might not get any shine. Like,
yeah.
On the air, you know,
so then how does it work with the music programming? Like, does someone else choose the songs that are going to be on and then you talk in, like, how does it work?
Yeah, so basically the music director and program director are essentially the ones who add all of the music and choose how it's going to be scheduled into the system. I literally only get to pick one song a day for my feature, which is called Every Day is a Holiday. Mm-hmm. And but even sometimes they won't back me up on what I want to play.
What?
Yeah. I'm hoping that's going to change a little bit now mm-hmm. that our OGPD, Kevin Weatherly, just returned to K-Rock to hopefully save the day. It's really sad with radio in terms of just like it is what it is and I have to just abide by that. But you know, it's okay because there is like it's such a strange time that we live in now mm-hmm. that I'm like, I don't know what these people want to hear. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. everybody has such a different diverse style now of what they want to hear that it's hard, you know, to program radio nowadays. You know, like the mm-hmm. stations that do the best are, you know, the stations like K-Earth that play, you know, hits from 80s, 90s and today. And so they get away with playing like all of these like massive songs that everybody wants to hear. But a lot of those are, you know, come from like K-Rock heritage mm-hmm. and things like that. So I think alternative is like, having like an identity crisis where we don't even know what
90s.
To play. Yeah, dude.
90s alternative rock.
The
90s is the best.
Those are the songs that test the best. But I'm like, but we can't just stay stuck in the 90s, you
Damn
know?
It.
We can't, you know what I mean? It's like, of mm-hmm. course we can still like play those songs, but like I just feel like we need to, I don't know, just pull the best of the best from like 2000 to 2010, 2010 to 2020, like pull mm-hmm. the best of the best, cuz I feel like in the early 2000s, like I just went to that Just Like Heaven music festival where mm-hmm. it was like, you know, Modest Mouse and The Shins and Franz Ferdinand and like Block Party and like MIA and Peaches and Chromeo. And like,
Peaches is such a good performer.
Dude. Like,
I've seen Peaches like 3 times.
I was like, that's right. She's right up your alley for sure. But, you know, it's like all of those bands, like I looked around and I was like, I've never seen more millennials in one place than mm-hmm, at that fucking mm-hmm. festival. But I think the majority of people listening to radio, especially alternative, are millennials. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, we need to be playing those bands more in the mix, like 90s, mm. those types of bands, and then whatever is currently coming out that's actually good. Like, I don't care how many streams it has. I don't care how many followers they have. There's a difference between a song that you're listening to on your Spotify in your car versus an epic song that belongs on the radio.
Totally.
And you can hear the difference. And I think a lot of programmers don't understand that. Mm. They don't have a good ear or good instincts sometimes. And luckily with Kevin Weatherly, he has extremely good instincts. He's famous for listening to an album and the label's like, this is the single. And he's like, that's great, but we're going to play this song because it's a better song.
Mm.
And then the band inevitably follows suit. The label will be like, oh, all right, well, K-Rock is playing this song. This is going to be the single. You know, so it's like just having like really good.
Is that like trend and out? Like, anticipating trends in a way.
I think it's just knowing the better song.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the label gets it wrong. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes the band gets it wrong. And you need like someone who's, you know, who knows what's going to sound good and who knows what's going to connect more with the listener, you know?
Yeah. I feel like I could see a lot of people, programmers, like probably choosing what they think people want to hear as opposed to, or like playing what plays the best
yes.
as opposed to like what's like just the best.
Yeah, totally. Because
and totally
it's following
it.
Trends,
yeah.
you know, and it's like being like, well, look how many streams it has on Spotify. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I just don't think that stuff translates to radio, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, because it's the best when you are like flipping through the radio and then you like, you're like, oh my God, this like old song came on that's like such a fucking good song. And it's like, honestly, like sometimes, you know, like I'll love a band, but like I don't want to hear their new shit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
oh,
that's
a lot of people.
Like, that's like a huge struggle, I'm sure, for a lot of bands. Like you want to hear the hits and like, but how do you make other songs hits?
Basically, playing them over mm-hmm. and over and over again until people until you inevitably love it. Like I feel like that happened with like the new Foo Fighters, mm-hmm. like their song Love Dies Young. Like I heard it and I was like, it's good. But now after hearing it so many times, I'm like, I fucking love this. And like Weezer just put out a song called A Little Bit of Love, but that was from the get-go for me. I was like, this song is so sweet and it's so perfect because it's just talking about how like if we all gave a little bit more love in the world, how like amazing it would be.
Yeah.
It's a little cheesy, but like I'm like, how much we need that song right now? It's like, you know, so it's really just like playing them, putting them in power rotation, putting them next to songs that you love so that you're going to keep listening and then you'll most likely stay locked in with it. So it's like there's a method
science behind
there's
it.
A method to the madness for sure, you know. But yeah, sometimes there are artists that come out with new songs and we will play them a little bit, but we know it's not a very strong song, so it'll be in rotation for a few weeks and then it's like we won't see it again. But I think a lot of bands right now are coming in hot. Like the new Jack White is so mm-hmm. good. Like there's just a lot of bands that I think they had time over the pandemic to really like spend time working on their albums. It mm-hmm. wasn't like, okay, we just finished touring, we have 2 months to make a new album and then we're back out on the road. It's like you're not gonna get a great album that way. It's like mm-hmm. to like think back to like how bands made, you know, their albums back in like the 70s and like mm-hmm. they would spend like, you know, 6 months in a studio and really like hone in. It's like, so, you know, I just feel like nowadays it's like people are like, oh yeah, I had a writing session earlier and we made this song, and I'm like,
oh, like done so quickly.
Yeah, like how can you make a song in like 3 hours? Like to me I'm just like, that's not built to last. That's mm-hmm. why it's like this like current landscape is very much like turn and burn. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, you have a hot song for 2 seconds.
That's like someone just trying to get content out rather than working on like creating a masterpiece.
Yeah, something epic. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like a lot of like this, you know, younger generation, or I don't know, even like our generation just mm-hmm. doesn't respect and value the artistic like nature of what these bands are really trying to do, you mm-hmm. know.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does become about like singles,
just like half-ass and laziness and hits and listens, as opposed to like putting in the work and really like connecting to themselves and trying to create something incredible.
Yeah, exactly. But I think like to me, the best of the best bands like continue mm-hmm. to go on that journey. But also, you have to have a certain amount of privilege to be able to do that, like in the sense of like you have the money to spare, like mm-hmm. you can take the time away from touring because you have the money, you know, and stuff like that. So, you know, it really just depends where you're at. Like I feel really bad for like up and coming bands because it's so hard to make it, and it's mm-hmm. so hard to make a living. And basically, if you don't sell tickets and merch, you're gonna be in the hole.
Like, yeah, you know? It's like you just need that like one.
The one song one, to hit, yeah. you know.
And is that still very true today?
It is and it isn't, because mm-hmm. there are some bands who will have a one-hit wonder, and then they go to try to tour, and then they can't really sell tickets, you know. But the song is still in heavy rotation.
Like, woo-hoo, da-na-na-na-na-na.
Well, that's Blur. No, Blur
is like...
Did they
have other songs? That
well,
was the first
you know,
thing I thought of.
Damon Albarn is Gorillaz, so yeah. Legendary.
Just kidding.
I'm like obsessed with Paul Barn. But this might be fucked up to say it, but a band like Lovely the Band, they have that song. I like that you're broken like
me. Yeah.
That's them. So like great band, great song, great performers, but I know that they had a hard time selling tickets on their mm-hmm. last tour because I saw them go up on like StubHub for like $15 like day of, you know, or whatever, you know.
15?
It were 10. It was like something like crazy where they just wanted to fill the venue. Yeah. It was like the Fonda. So it's, and nothing against that band. It's just, it's hard.
Right.
It's like you can have a hit record, mm-hmm. but it doesn't guarantee that you can sell tickets and mm-hmm. make a living from what you're doing.
Yeah. To do both in combination is like what you really need to have.
Yes. And that's why it's like having that large online presence where you're like super interactive with your fans mm-hmm. is like everything.
Oh, so it's not enough just to have a hot song. Uh-uh. Like you also have to be super engaging with your audience. Like,
I think
there's
so.
So much more they have to do today. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, because they're like building like a personal relationship with them where they're like, I want to go out mm-hmm. to the show and like maybe I can meet them at the merch booth after or whatever, you know?
Yeah. And you have to like connect with your audience online now too.
Yeah, totally.
Which isn't really rock and roll.
Yeah, not really. But then you have like a band like
me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But like you have other bands that literally like Turnstile is a great example. Like they're so fucking good. But they've been doing this for a long time. Like they just put out a new album. I want to say it's their fourth album and it's called Glow On. It came out last year. And this is the first time ever that they're like getting tons of shine. Like mm-hmm. radio's playing them. They're performing on The Tonight Show. They played at Coachella. They're selling out their shows everywhere. But they follow zero people on Instagram and they don't interact with anybody on Instagram. But they have a really large following. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's a lot of, and they're like punk, you know, like hardcore. And so there's, it depends on your vibe, you know?
Yeah.
It's really about like staying true to who you are, really, mm-hmm. as a band. And I think if you just consistently put out great music and tour, then you're like, you're gonna probably be successful.
I'm not like super in tune to new bands today, obviously, but like, obviously.
No, but, you know, but a lot, but I would say the average person though is kind of like
I don't know who any of the new artists are. Do you feel like it's more rare to hear someone coming out today who is more original? Do you feel like a lot of people are like constantly the same kind of vibe, the same?
Yes.
Like it's probably more shocking to hear someone that has something super new.
Yeah, absolutely. It's totally that. Because I think people are too afraid to do anything different. Like mm-hmm. they want to play it safe because they want to get famous so badly, you know, or maybe they just don't have the creative chops, you know. Mm-hmm. But so when a really interesting artist comes along, like Sam Fender, like from England, who's like one of the greatest songwriters to have happened in a very long time, massive in England. In America, it's going to be a much slower build. Mm-hmm. But like mm-hmm. to me, he's like, he just stood out to me. Turnstile, again, just stands out, like completely different in their own lane. A band like Cage the Elephant, you know, just doing something different and being really weird, like that, like, you know, their front man, like Matt, is like super weird on stage. Like he just does like kind of like Iggy Pop like vibes. Mm-hmm. So I think that there are like a lot of bands that are like, oh, we're just gonna make like love songs, like kind of like poppy with guitar love songs, and they'll come and go. But it's like, do you want to be like remembered? Do you want to like contribute to music, or mm-hmm. do you, you know, I think what your goal is. And I think a lot of people's goal today is like to get famous instead mm-hmm. of like to be a really good musician.
Yeah. I wonder how open like executives are at labels to
not very
original.
Yeah.
Like if anyone's helping with that.
Mm.
Or nurturing that, rather.
I think that they're following trends. I think they are just signing the latest TikTok person, mm-hmm. using them up for whatever length of time they have, dropping them, moving on to the next one, moving on. Like, I've heard of labels dropping really successful big bands that have been around for a long time because they don't want to invest in, like, long-term stuff. They want right now. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, in the long run is going to hurt them.
Damaging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't really know what's going to happen, but there's really no more like artist development that goes on with like labels, which is like a total shame.
Mm.
Because, you know, if we think back to like the 50s, 60s, 70s, it was all like artist development mm-hmm. and like allowing them to have time and space to grow and become Fleetwood Mac or the Jackson 5 or mm-hmm. whatever, you know, and it's like, nowadays, they're just like, if you're not producing content, if your last album wasn't the shit and you didn't have a single from it, like, we're going to drop you, mm-hmm. you know?
And I feel like a lot of artists had the time and space to, like, go through their own different phases, too. But there's probably the expectation to be, like, super developed at this point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're not, like, helping them in mm-hmm. any way, which is, like, what they should be doing, like, preparing them for, like, an interview. Like, a lot of these, like, new up-and-coming artists, like, I'll interview them, and I'm just like, oh, my God, you're not selling yourself very well.
They don't work with PR people?
I mean, some of them do, and some of them are naturally good at it, but some of them you're just like, really? No one has like sat you down and been like, let's like put your story together. Like, let's, what are some interesting things that have happened in your life that we could like talk about, you know? And, or even just performance, like, okay, you might have like a hot song, but how does that translate in your live performance? And do you need to have some hired guns on stage with you? Like, are you using tracks? Like, all of those things like really matter. And I feel like what we saw a lot happen in the pandemic was, you know, the late night shows, they were having like artists pre-tape their performances. So it's just like, it was just like all like lip synced.
Right.
And not like just super, you know, I was just like, this is so like contrived, you know? And then like you go out and you see these people live and you're just like, you're auto-tuned though. Like auto-tuned is fine in its own right. But like when it's just, I don't know, you're just like, this is, I can't tell if you're talented or not.
Because
you're just hiding behind all of these like effects, you know?
So I feel like auto-tune is more of like a pop thing though.
Yeah.
So do you see that with like a lot of new alternative rock bands?
Yeah. I mean, I think so. I think a lot more people are relying on auto-tune than we would like to know about.
That's depressing.
It is very depressing. It really is. You know, because I think one of the greatest things about rock and alternative is the imperfection that comes from it. So you think about like a Kurt Cobain or like a Zach De La Rocha that's like, they just, it's like coming from the pit of their stomach. And like, you know, the imperfections are what make it so beautiful.
Yes.
So,
oh my God, that's so well said.
I don't like things that are polished at all. I think everything today is like overproduced. Like, but I think that's why like when Foo Fighters do things like when they were just like, they were like, oh, we're going to record everything to tape. We're going to do it like old school style. It's like it really translates in the music. It's like I just think it makes it more tangible somehow, where you can like feel it more than people going into like the computer and just making it all sound perfect. I'm like, I don't want it to sound perfect.
Yeah, like, that's why it's like I love acoustic versions of songs, like the unplugged version.
Yes.
There's so much more magical. And like you said, like that unpolished, like you can really feel it more.
Like a good example of that is like Youngblood, who I love so much. And he's great. Like his records are incredible. But when I listen to his like acoustic stuff or when I go and I see him live, oh my God, it's a whole other experience. It's like fucking amazing. And he's so talented. But you might listen to his like super polished, you know, stuff, which I know everybody has to do that today. But, you know, you may not know how incredible he actually is because I'm like, let him hit those like notes that might not sound perfect, but that are coming from like the soul, you know?
Totally. Yeah. I love that. So what's like the craziest thing that ever happened on air?
Gosh, I mean, I don't really know that I've had anything like super crazy happen. I mean, it would always be fun, like when we would have like my dad call in to like the morning show, like up in San Francisco, because my dad is like the cutest like Persian man in the whole world, and we didn't have a budget, Menace and I, so my dad like gave us like $1,500 to get our own shirts made so that we could like hand them out. And they said like rep the Bay, like Megan and Menace, like they were sick. And so we like had my dad come on the air and he was like so excited because my dad loves radio. Like he loves it. So he was just like, oh, hello. Like, oh, you know, he was like so excited and like Menace like loved it. So that was like fun because it's just like, oh my God, like my dad is like on the radio with me. So
That's
moments
so
like
cute.
That are like really cool. I think when I said fuck, like on one of my first shows, that was like, I was like panicked. And then it was so funny because like a few weeks later, my boss like in a meeting was like, you know, we want to like give props to Megan. She only said fuck one time. And I was like, did he hear it? Did he? But he was like totally just like,
but I'm sure everyone slips and does that. I mean, like
I would get like such a big FCC fine for that stuff. If someone reports you, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I feel like with being on air, it's like you don't really bring on as many guests and stuff unless you're doing like a morning show. So that's why like I like to do my podcast, because that's like where, you know, you can like really connect one-on-one, and doing artist interviews is always fun. I did something crazy when like Oliver Tree came in. We like literally brought scooters in off the street because he's like known for like, you know, doing his scooter stuff. So we rode those. It was my first time ever riding one. It was like so insane.
That's so fun.
We rode them like through the halls and like into the sales area and like throwing like paper at the sales staff and stuff. So stuff like that is just it's just fun, you know, because it's like, where else are you going to get to do some crazy shit like that, you know?
Totally. How many people work at K-Rock? Is it still like a big...
It definitely used to be a lot more people.
Mm-hmm.
The pandemic like really fucked things up. Mm-hmm. And we had someone come in after Kevin Weatherly left for a couple years. We had someone come in that really did not understand the brand, mm-hmm. and did not understand how to treat certain people.
Mm-hmm.
So he fired the Kevin morning show. It was like Kevin, Ally, and Jensen. So that was like an offshoot from Kevin and Bean, right? It was like Kevin Ryder's show. And that was a great show, but like he fired them at the top of the pandemic. And that pissed off so many people.
Yeah.
You know? And then it was like Stryker left and went to like our competitor because he couldn't, you know, could no longer like take how things were going.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like totally understandable. I mean, I was like totally withered too. It was like really hard time. But now, with Kevin Weatherly coming back, we're like, we're just like ready to do it. We're the underdog. Like, I, you know, it's like I'm a female on in the afternoon, but like male dominated,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm just like, I don't know. I'm like ready to fucking do this shit. So, you know, it's like, and I think we have a really great morning show. We have like Klein and Ally in the morning who are super awesome. And they actually used to do a morning show at Live 105. I think we have a solid crew. You know, we have Nicole in middays. We have Kevin Kenny on at night. And the thing is, like, we know that we're, you know, we're like a skeleton crew. We're like very bare bones right now. Mm-hmm. But we do this because we love it. You know, we do this because we love music so much and we love radio so much and like our listeners. You know, it's like I'll get DMs or like texts and emails and stuff that people are just like, you know, you really like lifted up my spirits today. Aww. Or thank you for talking about your sobriety. Like I have like this many days sober. Like,
yeah.
So whenever I get like those types of messages from listeners, I'm always like, okay,
mm-hmm.
this, you're on the right track. This is why you're doing what you're doing, you know?
Yeah. And I'm sure that people really appreciate the audience appreciating when you do get like more personal too, because they just feel like you're like, oh, you're a real person.
Yes.
Like talking to me, I'm sure like a lot of people feel like they can feel that connection like through the radio.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Like, cause I think that you get so many generic
mm-hmm.
DJs a lot of times, like people that are too afraid to lay it out on the mm-hmm. line, you know? But I just have always been like, if I think about like my favorite podcasters, like if I think about like Marc Maron,
right?
Like
I love Maron.
Oh my God, I love him so mm-hmm. much.
But and, he just like
he
says
just lays
what's
it
on
out.
Totally.
He just says everything, mm-hmm. and like I love that. And so I'm just like, no one has ever told me not to do, you know, that. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, I'm just gonna keep doing it. And I think that's what keeps people to stay. Like even if the music, they don't really care for it that much, they'll stay in for the personality. Like a lot of times, you know.
I love that. That's so cool. How do you keep up your energy? How long are the blocks that you do?
4-hour shifts.
So how do you keep up your energy for that? Because like I know for me, like our producer is always like, oh, do you want to like double up on podcasts? I'm like, no, I'm not Rogan. Like I can't talk for 4 hours straight. Like I would just get like exhausted.
Yeah.
Like, well, do you find that it could be draining to?
Oh, my God.
Because you have to be on.
You have to be on every day. 5 days a week. You know, so what I learned how to do is basically check your shit at the door, and no matter what is going on with me, I always smile. So I always have a smile on my face when I'm talking, and I'm also like notorious for like laughing on air, you know, like I'm always laughing at myself. I'm always like laughing. I'm just like, you know, so I always have a smile on, and that translates.
Yes, it does. I can hear the difference.
Yeah, you really can. Like when you have a smile on your face, you're just like, oh my gosh. And it tricks your brain into thinking like everything's good. I'm happy. However, during the pandemic, they got rid of a shitload of people within our company. So they were like, they came to like me and Nicole. They were like, you're going to be on 7 markets total. So we were doing 7 radio shows at home every day.
Fuck.
It killed us both.
Yeah.
It fucking killed us.
Like, are you just sitting there with like 5 cups of coffee all
day? Dude, just, I was just like, and I'm like, I don't know fucking shit about Kansas City. I don't know. So I'm Googling what's going on in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. What's going on in Seattle? Like, it was horrible. So finally we took a stand and we're like, we're not doing this shit anymore.
Yeah.
You want us live in the studio? We cannot do all of this.
So you were doing it from home for how long?
for almost 2 years. I think it was almost 2 years.
Was it nice to get back into the studio?
It was kind of hard at first. It was kind of tough because...
Were you like, now I can't wear my sweatpants?
I wear sweatpants still. Okay, good. Yeah, I wore them yesterday. I was like, I can't put pants on today, you know? It was a little weird because coming back in, like, just not... I don't know, just everything was so disjointed with K-Rock at the time. And then so we're going back in live, and then it was not long after that our boss... during the last 2 years, was like, I'm stepping down from my role. Mm-hmm. So then we didn't have anyone in charge aside from our music director, but he didn't really have full authority to do anything. So we're like in this like limbo phase until we found out Kevin Weatherly was coming back. So now I'm very excited to be in the studio because Kevin's all amped up and he's like coming in the studio and like, you know, I'm just like, let's fucking go. But I got so comfortable working from home too that it was like kind of hard to come back in. But now I'm used to it again. And then I'm still on a station up in Sacramento, too, just because, like, I do very well up there. And yeah. I still wanted to have, like, a Bay Area connection. So because I was on in San Francisco for such a long time, but they flipped that station, unfortunately. But, yeah, so, like, so now I'm just kind of, like, back into just, like, focusing in on K-Rock as much as possible. You know, it's, like, the main thing.
And then I love what you said about having to check your shit at the door. Like, I think that's obviously true for any performer. So, like... Have you ever had any super hard circumstances where, like, you're like, fuck, now I have to, like, go and really just, like, force this and put on this face?
Yeah.
Like, the show must go on.
Definitely. I mean, I remember the day that my dad's girlfriend passed away from pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. And I was, like, I was filling in for Stryker that day. So I was on in the afternoon. And I think I only had, like, a half an hour left. And I just was like, hey, can I just go home to my dad's house and, like, just, you know. Yeah. And they were like, yeah, just go, you know. I've had days where I got into an argument with someone at work and I was, like, in the studio crying and just feeling like shit. And then I have to, like, go on the radio. And
be like, ha, 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 hey, that was Blink 182.
Right. But sometimes I can't fake the funk. And then I just try to be honest about that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just, like, not feeling like myself, like, whatever. I'm just having a hard day, whatever. And listeners are sympathetic to that, too. Because, like, no one can just be happy all the time.
It's psychotic.
You know? Yeah, it is.
And inauthentic. And exactly. I'm sure people can feel that, especially for a station like K-Rock. I don't think they expect that.
No, they don't. And they're like, and they'll notice, even on days when I think that I'm fooling everybody, they'll be like, hey, like, you sound a little down. Are you okay?
And I'm and like, then you're like, wait, am fucking... I okay?
I know. No, totally. Like, and I went through, like, a really hard time, like, the last, like, 6 weeks. I, like, totally hit my mental health wall where I was like, I couldn't go into work. I was like, I can't come in. Like, I'm literally having, like, a breakdown. Mm-hmm. And they allowed me to have, like, a few days off. And I just, like, got on the phone and I was like, okay, gonna talk to a psychiatrist, starting with the therapist. Yeah. And I started on meds that are like, it's been life changing. Like, honestly, like,
we love meds,
dude. Well, I see. I had tried some SSRIs in the past and they made me feel like twacked out and like I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. And I was like, fuck that. So I'd be on them for 2 weeks and then I'd be like, fuck this. My psychiatrist doesn't know fucking anything. But then I found like an outside psychiatrist, like paying out in my pocket. And he sat with me for like over an hour, diagnosed me. And now I'm on a mood stabilizer and it's been awesome. Like, this is like probably my 6th week on it. And I feel like a different person. I didn't know that I could like not feel panicked 100% of the time.
Yeah,
like,
that's amazing.
You know, like I'm definitely coming out of my depression and my anxiety level is like, it's like 10%, you know, which is like incredible.
Yeah, I'm on Prozac, 10 milligrams, like just the lowest dose. But it just like really helped me because I was getting... Before I got pregnant, I was just like getting super depressed before my period. And I was like, do I have to feel like this? Mm-hmm. And then my doctor was like, oh, just try Prozac. And like, just like the littlest amount, it just like helped me just like feel more regulated.
Yeah.
And like, I just like don't have these like dips anymore.
Totally. Exactly. And it's like, we don't know until you actually find the relief. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, holy shit, why haven't I been doing
it's
this
crazy.
For years? Like,
yeah.
I really wish I had found this medication sooner, but I'm just really happy that I sprung into action, which, as you know, because we're sober, it's like, that's what we do. We're like, okay, let's find the solution. I've been suffering long enough. Let's figure out what the solution is.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm just like so glad to be in a much better place. I feel like it's the start of a new chapter because, you know, we're we're really trying to fix K-Rock and get it back to where it needs to be. And, like, I'm really excited to be on the front lines of that. And I was just like, I can't do this with this depression. Like, it's not possible, you know, because I was, like, literally I could barely get out of bed, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it was, like, the last 2 years of doing all those shows, I was, my whole battery was drained, you know? And
I yeah,
was so
I imagine that it would be. Wait, so do you drink caffeine like all shift long? Like, how does that work?
I'll usually, some days I'll like have a Red Bull at the very beginning, you know, I'll do like a sugar free Red Bull, pound it and like go for that. Sometimes I'll just like have a coffee. But I, you know, I'm not really drinking caffeine like the whole time,
and also then you have like, to pee.
Yeah, you do, but that's fine. I have to pee all the time anyway, so but like you're kind of like locked into what you're doing, so
do you
like,
get
busy,
very drained,
you know?
After like, how do you decompress after work?
I actually get pretty energized at work. Yeah, like some days if I'm just tired, I'm just like, okay, I'm gonna go home and just like chill. But a lot of times I leave work and I'm like way more energized than when I walked in, you know, because I'm feeling useful. I'm like emoting. I'm talking to listeners on the phone. Like I'm, you know, I'm like busy in there and like doing research on music and like really wanting to like curate my show. Yeah. So it'll like leave me feeling like good about myself, you know.
Do people hear your voice and they're like, you sound familiar? Like out in public.
Every
in the
now
world.
And again, but it's more like, I will be recognized from like my Instagram or, you know, or like they know me from K-Rock. But like a lot of times I'm out at shows and like people be like, hi, like I listen to you all the time and I love you, blah, blah. And I'm like always like, what? That's so like so crazy. Because I definitely don't consider myself a celebrity in any capacity. You know, I'm like, it's just radio, you know.
How do guys react with dating?
Dude, I am so beyond single, Chelsea. Like, I can't even tell you. I literally have been sober 6.5 years, and I have not been in a relationship that entire time.
Really?
And I mean, I haven't even, become close to anyone that I could even imagine dating long term.
Just because you haven't seen anything you like.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything I like, and when I do see things that I like, it's a bad idea. So I hold myself back from that. Yes. And then I also think that a lot of guys are intimidated by what I do.
I would imagine.
You know, like I'm sure even as a comedian, it you know, it's like you literally married another comedian because you get each other.
Right.
But like otherwise, it's like they're like, oh, she's more successful than I am and she's a public figure. And da-da. So it's like I need to be with someone that's like super secure in what they're doing. Very independent, like that can like go to events with me, but let me go do my thing that I have to do.
Yeah, and they're not going to get like jealous and hating.
I can't do any of that
stuff. Trying to like dim your light or just like pump you up.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like I can't really do drama, you know, and like I just want to be around someone who's just super dope and like funny and, you know, so but I don't actively do anything for my dating life. Like I'm not on the apps. Like
I tried
one and I was like, this is fucking bullshit. Like it's like that's how you shop for shoes. You know, I'm not shopping for a human being. Like that's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great
like and, you know, I know a lot of people have met their person that way. But it's just like I would rather meet a person in real life.
Me too. I felt that way too when I was single.
And I'm just like, you know, it like happens on like the universe's time.
When you least expect it.
Yeah.
Too, I feel like
exactly.
That's like always when I met any guy I dated, like it was just someone in person who like magically kind of showed up and like things connected.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that will happen for me too.
Totally.
And I don't sit around thinking like, I'm so lonely. I want a boyfriend. Like it's not my story at all. Like, I don't even think I want kids. Like, I you know, I'm just having a good time right now, you know?
Yeah.
But I also know I'm like, I'm 35. Like, you know, I'm like, do
Are
I
you
have...
born in 87?
86.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm 87.
Okay, nice. Yeah. And both 6 years
I know,
sober.
That's so funny.
I love this. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. I'm very curious to see, like, how things are going to go. But I also know... Like, I'm in this phase of development where I am feeling better about myself and I'm working on myself a lot. So that will also help, I think, help attract the right person at the right time.
Totally.
You know, because I think, like, in the last couple years, like, I have been so, like, just dealing with my depression so much. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think I had much to offer someone else. So now, like, I think, like, that I'm getting better and maybe I'm not so centric on work because I feel like I'm a bit of a workaholic.
Yeah.
And you know, I put so much into what I do and all that. So maybe I'm like making more space in my life for that to happen, you know.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh my God. Thank you for having me.
So tell us where we can hear your podcast and when we can hear you on the radio.
Okay.
And your social and all that fun
the
stuff.
Name of my podcast is Seven Words with Megan Holiday. And it's based on, the title is based on the George Carlin, Seven Words You Can't Say on Television and Radio. Also, just started watching that that documentary about George Carlin, and it's epic. He's like one of those people that, one of those comedians like that I feel like was one of the first adults telling me the truth for the first time in my life. You know what
I
mean?
He was the first comedian I saw on TV. Mm-hmm. Well, not, it was like his like special HBO was somewhere. Special. I don't remember. Yeah. I saw it when I was like 10 and I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, no one has ever laid it out like him, you know, just like, so, I love him so much. So, okay. You can listen to my podcast wherever you get podcasts. And then you can listen to me on K-Rock. Which is 106.7 in LA. You can listen on the Odyssey app if you would like. And that's Monday through Friday, 2 to 6. Yeah. And
great slot, by the way.
Yeah.
Very good slot.
Dude, afternoon drive is the dream. It's
you have
dream
to work
slot.
Your way up to a good slot.
You really do. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it's literally like, it's working hard, being good at what you do, and also luck. It's just luck.
Mm.
I just was at the right places at the right times, and I just work really hard, and I love what I do. So I hope that I get to stay in the afternoon. You know, anything can happen, but I love this time slot, so.
Yay.
Yeah.
And your social?
Socials at Megan Holiday, and you just spell Megan the regular way. Don't throw any
H's
or A's in there. Just
M-E-G-A-N.
Isn't that funny? Holiday,
no, it's not
the
Megan.
Regular way. Yeah,
it's Megan.
Yeah, it's Megan. Thank you. Love you it. Know. So this has been so fun. I'm so glad that we got to do this today.
Thank you for coming.
Bye.
Bye.